Hello, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and today we are going to be looking at what is probably one of the most controversial chapters. I would say, I'm not going to say the whole Bible, but definitely for the book of Genesis, and the discussion of how it is that humanity reaches this point of needing a flood, okay? So, as we have talked about over the last couple of weeks, we have looked into and seen how creation has come about. We have seen how Adam and Eve came about. We've seen how sin has come about as entering into the world. Excuse me, I've got a really bad cough today. And we have looked even further into some different aspects of what is going on in the early days of mankind. We see Cain and Abel, of course, and the problems that come about there. We see the murder of Abel. We looked very deeply into the nature and the character of the line of Cain. And then, of course, we also have now talked about, as of last week, the godly line of Seth. And that leads us to chapter 6 today. And what we're going to see is we're going to see mankind fall into a position where God feels that he needs to destroy the world and start over again. We're going to find out some specific things about Noah, and we're going to find out about God's plan to try and quote-unquote save mankind to maintain the redemptive plan. Now, however, there's a weird narrative that occurs here in chapter 6 that leads into this discussion about how the world reaches this climax in evil behavior. So let's get started here. It says, "And it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair. And they took them wives of all which they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." Okay, so let's have this discussion, right? Obviously, if you have even remotely studied the Bible, you have come down to this discussion about who are the sons of God, okay? Who is it that are these sons of God? And we're going to talk about both sides of this argument, okay? There are some people that say that the sons of God means angels, and the idea behind that and the reason for that is that there's three instances that this term is used in the book of Job that people argue are more that they apply more likely to angels. Okay, another reason for that is because of the fact that it says there were giants in the earth in those days. A lot of people take that to mean the literal term of the word, which is to be a big, huge monstrosity person. And the only way something like that could come about is if there is some unnatural birth that comes into play, some unnatural sexual relationship that would have occurred between angels and humanity. All right. So that's argument one, that this is a supernatural thing. Satan's trying to corrupt the genetic gene pool of men to bring about this demonic evil to try and prevent the coming of the Messiah. Okay, for people that go all the way with this discussion, that's what they believe. That Satan used this as an opportunity to try and corrupt the seed of men and stop the redemptive plan of God. Okay, now, the other side of this argument is that this is talking about the godly line of Seth, all right? Meaning the guys we just talked about in chapter 5, we're continuing that context saying, okay, we have these men that are of the godly line of Seth, that there's these men that were trying to maintain righteousness, and that there are some of the sons of these men who go after daughters from the line of Cain, which is the lineage that we talked about in chapter 4. Okay? The argument for that approach is that we have just discussed the ungodly line of Cain and the godly line of Seth, and now we are talking about how, yes, there were these men that stayed true to God, but obviously those men had more than one son. And there is now this intermingling of these two lines, the line of Cain and the line of Seth, which of course is strictly prohibited by God. God commands hundreds of thousands of times in the Bible to not be unequally yoked with your spouse, which has nothing to do with culture, skin color, none of that. It has to do with lost and not lost. And there's, of course, a huge discussion that we can have about why that matters. And we will have that discussion later on, but we know that God strictly prohibits it because of the fact that it will always end up leading into wrongdoing and sin. Okay? Now, let me give you, I'm going to give you my reasoning for what I interpret this to mean. Okay? I interpret this to mean that these are the sons of Seth, that this is the godly line of Seth. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, there are a multiplicity of times in the Bible where there are translations and terms used that don't necessarily indicate the same thing. The book of Job is a book that is the first book ever written in the Old Testament. It is a completely poetic book. It is all poetry, but for like four chapters of the entire book at the beginning and the end in which it's narrative, okay? So when we're looking at the book of Job, I would say the book of Job in itself is an anomaly and an exception because you're not going to interpret a lot of what goes on in the book of Job literally. And to try to take the book of Job as your guide for interpreting other aspects of the Old Testament, I think is highly foolish. Now, that may be an arrogant statement for me to make. I may get to heaven and find out I'm completely wrong, but this is my educated opinion, okay? So first of all, I think the book of Job is an anomaly. I believe it is God-inspired scripture, but I don't think it's something we should take and go, well, it uses this term here three times, therefore it's got to apply to this, okay? That's point number one. Point number two is much more logical. There's a bigger logical approach here. Let's say that these are angels and they intermarry with humanity. There's a couple of major, major problems with that interpretation. First of all, humanity and the angels are not made the same. Okay? And when I say not made the same, I'm not even talking about this discussion of sex versus no sex versus whatever. And of course, when I say sex, male or female. Okay? The problem already right off the bat is the angels are not three-part beings. They're not made in the image of God. Their freedom, their decision, they made one single time and then it was implanted forever. That Satan convinced a third of the angels to follow him into hell. They made their decision to be disobedient to God in the beginning. And then these other ones decided to be obedient. And now for all of eternity, that has remained the same. That decision has been made and engraved strictly in place. And what I'm saying is that the angels do not have the same level of freedom that humanity has. They don't have the same level of free will decisions that humanity has. Okay? So, obviously, logically speaking, if we are not even genetically the same, we're not created the same, we're not made in the same image, the idea that these angels could reproduce with humanity is absolutely absurd and is borderline Greek mythology. Because now, if we go that far and we say, okay, well, yeah, they could interbreed, then this is my next question. Why is that still not going on today? Why do you not still have this same problem? There was just a handful then, according, if we go, because there's verses in Jude that talk about that there were spirits who did such evil that God even locked them up, and people say that it was a sexual sin, an immoral sin, that ends up in that because of some of the translation and the things that are written there in the book of Jude. Again, though, there's a huge problem with this. They're not genetically the same. If a human being tries to reproduce with an animal, it's not possible. The genetic material is not the same. You can try all you want. You could try all that you wanted to try to crossbreed a human being, even with a monkey, even with a gorilla that has only two less chromosomes than a human being. It's not physically possible. It cannot occur. Now, the argument that some people pose for this, of course, is that, well, these people were demonically possessed and then they slept with human women. Well, we have another problem there, because if a demon possessed a human body and had a sexual relationship with another woman, that is still not that there is demon blood being passed on to this child. It's a human body and a human body reproducing. That doesn't create some special child, okay? So that, again, we're going to throw that out the window. Demonic possession does not equal a biological change. Now, there's some people that say that they could take on the form of a human being permanently. Again, being able to take on a form is not a biological change. I could try to morph my form into a squirrel, but at the end of the day, I'm still a human being. I may be able to change my appearance. I look like a male. I am sexually a human male. I could make myself look like a woman. That does not change biologically what I am. So even if these angels look like humans, that does not change the nature of how God created them. So my first reason, of course, is that you cannot use an anomaly to interpret the rest of the scriptures. Okay? The book of Job is its own very interesting book. It stands on its own. It was one of the first books written. It's one of the oldest books ever written. And there's a lot about the book of Job that's still highly debated to this day. Okay? So firstly, using an anomaly to make your interpretation, I think that's a foolish and reckless decision when interpreting the Bible. Okay? Secondly, logically speaking, this is physically impossible. No matter how we argue it, no matter how we paint it up to be, there is no way that this biological thing could have happened. Because there's some people, of course, my next argument being that Jesus Christ said, angels are neither given in marriage nor have relationships. Okay? A lot of people that believe this still needs to be interpreted as angels go, well, yeah, but he didn't say that there's no sex. They just said that they're not male or female. But that they're not given in marriage. Friends, if they biologically have their own sex, meaning there's male and female angels, there is no way in the world they could not and would not be given in marriage. That is absolute foolishness. They are, in my opinion, and my highly studied opinion, have no sex whatsoever about them. They are given masculine names because they are beings of God, and that is where they are a position of authority, and they are a symbol of authority because they come with the authority of God. Therefore, they come in the shape of human beings and of human men. Okay? To try to say that just because Jesus Christ didn't specifically say, oh, well, there's not boys and girls, therefore there's no marriage, I think you're trying to split hairs because you're wanting to make this out to be more than it is and some great supernatural way of attracting people's attention. So, first reason, I would never use a book that is in its own an anomaly to interpret the usage of another phrase. Secondly, from a logical, physical, thought-out process, it is impossible. Thirdly, Jesus Christ himself said they're not given in marriage, and I think that is a very strong argument for they don't even have the ability to reproduce. My fourth reason, I do have five. I'm sorry, you're going to have to sit tight through this before we get into Genesis. Sorry. My fourth reason for this is also the fact that not only do we have this issue of biology and what Christ said, but if this were still possible, why is it not going on today? if this was ever possible, why is it not present today? And many people will argue with that and say, well, I mean, demon activity was going on highly around the time of Christ, but it's not happening today. That's true. But what we are talking about is the potential for Satan to corrupt men even further than they are already corrupted. I don't feel like that's a battle plan he would give up. Which the argument is, well, God allows him to do things and God doesn't allow him to do things. Aha, now I've got you. Why in the world would God have allowed this to occur if he was just going to turn around and destroy all of mankind anyway? Oh, yeah. We kind of make this out like Satan got one in on God and he almost was successful. And then God was like, oh my goodness, we need to fix this. And the last person we can use to fix this is Noah. I don't believe God would have ever allowed this to occur, even if I believed it were possible. For the very nature that if you have a being that is born, that is truly an abomination, that somehow has surpassed biological abilities, meaning that it's two things that are made totally, completely different, and a totally different time and setting and everything else, come together to procreate, to have a child. How do you view this child? It's half human, meaning that it should have a free will and a soul, so it has the ability to follow God, but angels are an eternal being, so you can't, who are we to throw the quarter up and say, yeah, I think, though, that he still would have been a mortal being, even though he was born to an immortal being who is already condemned to hell for an eternity. Do you see the problem here? There's a very huge problem with that discussion, because now we're running on the line of God not being just in how he deals with these children. That's a very fine line. Especially when we start having this discussion of how do you know that it wasn't more human than demon, angel, whatever you want to call it, or how do you know it was more angel or demon than it was human? Big, big, huge problem there. I don't think God would have allowed it to happen, and I think that for it to even have been allowed to happen would have put God in a very precarious situation. A situation that argumentatively would leave the Bible open for being said to be complete and total just made up. Because I think you would completely ruin the redemptive plan by translating it that way and thinking about it logically. My fifth reason is a little more simplistic. In the context of what we've talked about in Genesis, we have talked about the ungodly line of Cain. We've now talked about the godly line of Seth. To me, it makes complete and total sense that the sons of God would be men that were in the following the line of Seth, that were doing right and were raised right and knew better, who took daughters from the line of Cain simply because they were good-looking women. If I had a nickel for every place in the Bible where a man chose a woman because of what he could get physically, than what he could get spiritually, I would be a millionaire. This is one of the tale as old as time sins of the book of the Bible. This is a sin that got David. This is a sin that got Solomon. This is a sin that got Rehoboam. This is a sin that got Absalom. This is a sin that got pretty much every single man in the Bible except for a handful who didn't fall for it. This is a sin that we can, that this tale is old as time. Guys, the Israelites mingling with the prostitutes of the idols. The men of the Israelites mingling with the Canaanite women. Even some of the men that God called to be his men, fooling around with women they had no business fooling around with, or taking more women than God had allowed them to scripturally and rightfully take. I think that the context of this in itself tells you who this is talking about. Now, I know what you're thinking. Okay, well, how do you remedy this term for giants? Okay? Because according to how I read this, what has happened here is it came to pass, men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them. Meaning that both of these lines are reproducing at an astronomical rate. We've got people living for 900 years. Okay? We have civilization and population blowing out of proportion. People are here, people are there. It's believed that by the time Adam would have died, there was almost 7 to 8 million people already on the earth. Okay? So what we have here, in my opinion, and what I think is clear as day in the scriptures, is we have all of this reproduction that's going on, and of course, as there are children being born, daughters are born unto them. And what happens here is that it's not typically that sinful daughters fall for the good Christian boy and go home with him and get their act together. It's typically that good Christian boys see really, really bad girls that are very attractive and will fleshly make them feel good, and they chase after them, and now you have lost a righteous individual to sin because he would rather have his flesh than he would serve God. So what's happened is that now the sons of God, the line of Seth, the men of Seth, see the daughters of men, a line of Cain, the line of flesh, and they're beautiful, and they take them wives. Now let me ask you a question. When David took wives he wasn't supposed to have, what did it lead him to? Sin and bad decisions. When Solomon took wives that he should not have taken, what did it lead him to? Idolatry throughout all the nation of Israel. Some of the worst gods imaginable brought into Israel. Molech, Chemosh, all of these people that are brought, all of these idols that are brought in, idols that have sacrifices that would make your skin crawl if I talked about them. Meaning that it's a tale as old as time that good godly men fall for women they had no business being around. And it leads to evil. Because God says in verse 3, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he is also is flesh. Yet his days shall be 120 years. God says, I'm not going to try to get men to get their act together forever. There is a limit to the amount of time God will deal with the sinful actions and behavior of mankind before he deals with it. This did not have to be a situation. This doesn't mean that for God to be angry enough to destroy the earth, we had to have angels and humans interbreeding into some crazy, weird background story. There are plenty of times in the Bible God destroyed men for no longer serving him. There's been plenty of times in the Bible where men have gotten so bad God has destroyed them because there's no other option. This is no different. God says, I'm not going to, you only have so many chances before I'm going to deal with you. And the days of men shall be 120 years. This does not mean physical age. If anything, if that's the truth, that men can live for now 120 years at this point, there's a lot of people missing that deadline by 50 and 60 years. That's not what this means. It means 120 years from when God proclaimed this, the flood was going to happen. Now, hang on just a minute. Remember when I said that in the context of this, I believe this was a line of Seth and the line of Cain intermingling. When God announces this, he says they have 120 years from the time that these two bloodlines started mingling before the flood. Meaning that this discussion happened long before Mr. Noah was born. Meaning that before Noah was even born, okay? Because we know that it was Lamech, right? Let's go back up to chapter 5 together. It had begat Lamech. Methuselah lived 187 years and he had Lamech, right? And Methuselah lived after he begat Lamech 782 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Methuselah were 969 years and he died. And Lamech lived 182 years and begat a son, and he called his name Noah, saying, "This same shall comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord had cursed." And Lamech lived after he begat Noah 595 years and begat sons and daughters. Then all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died, and Noah was 500 years old. And Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So we have this discussion that comes into being right around the time that Noah, probably even a little bit longer after Noah, okay, is almost 500 years old that this discussion happens, because we have all this mingling that gets to go on for almost 900 years. Because this would have been given around the time of Methuselah. I'm sorry, I said Noah earlier. I just realized that. I'm getting all my names mixed up. Around Methuselah, because Methuselah, it says, after he dies, then it shall come. Okay? Meaning that you've got all this time, and then after he dies, 120 years later, boom, we're done. This is over with. Okay? So we have a lot of time where Noah's already been alive for this intermingling to be going on and occurring. And we already have seen this intermingling with his three kids. Ham, Shem, and Japheth were not exactly the greatest guys in the world. In fact, we know Ham looks upon his father's nakedness. Right after the flood happens, Noah decided to do something he ought not to have done. And there's some discussion and some disagreement that goes on as to what exactly that meant upon, looked upon his father's nakedness, okay? And we're going to get into that in the next couple of weeks. So it is much more common sense, it's much more logical, and it's a much smarter approach in interpreting these scriptures, in my opinion, with a lot less holes, to say that this is a sin as old as time, and we have good godly men who have sons, and their sons did a really dumb thing and go after ungodly women, which leads to a situation of ungodly families, which leads to more ungodly children, and at the astronomical rate at which population was growing, we have more and more and more lost, evil, sinful people that are getting eviler by the generation that are being reproduced over and over and over again. And God says, look, I'm not going to strive with men forever, meaning I'm not going to tolerate this behavior forever, which is another problem with it. These were angel, human abominations. Why does he refer to them as men? This is human. This is just humanity and all of its wicked ways is the most simplistic approach to this. There's a much more simple answer. And it fits with what God is going to say later on. So this is where you think you're going to get me, though, right? Verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. All right. So you go, aha! There it is, Pastor Zach. Tell me, how were there giants in the earth in those days? First of all, your concept of giant may be very flawed. The idea of a giant, because we refer to Goliath as a giant, the Philistine, right? Depending on how we interpret that measurement of cubits, some people say he was only about 7.5 feet tall to maybe 9.5, 10 feet tall, okay? There's a lot of argument that goes on there. Now, granted, no matter how we do that, a Jew's average height is 5'4". A Jewish male, average height, 5'4". So if you got a guy at 7.5 feet tall, yeah, that's a giant to me. I'm 6 feet, and I'd still say the guy's a giant to me. Even if he's 9 feet tall, he's a giant to me. He's definitely a giant to an Israelite. So your terminology for giant does not, the idea of the term giant being used here does not say, oh, well, then it had to be some angel-human abomination, because how else would there have been a giant? When the term giant is used for people that are just abnormally tall, but not giant in the sense that he looked like Tyrannosaurus Rex, okay? So the idea of there were giants in the earth in those days also, there's another problem. This term is not only used physically in the Bible, but it's also used metaphorically, meaning that there were giants in the earth in those days, meaning men that were leaders, men that were renowned, legendary, things of that nature. If you go look at Greek mythology and the writings of those men, they refer to guys like Achilles and Hercules, these who were real men. They were men that actually lived, but they referred to them as giants in their time, meaning they were mighty men of war. They were killers. They were powerful. They were so good that you thought they were invincible. We've already seen that kind of behavior being displayed in the line of Cain. What did way up here? We go all the way back to chapter 4, so we can get the exact terminology for the wives' names and everything. But if you remember, Mr. Lamech Sr., not Lamech Jr. of Seth's line, what did he refer to himself as? He says, "Adon, Zillah, hear my voice, ye wives of Lamech, hearken unto my speech. For I have slain a man to my wounding, and a young man to my hurt. If Cain should be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold." You already have this idea of these warlords that have come about. You already have this idea of men who kill and are untouchable to other men. I think this simply means, I think it's completely metaphoric, and that it goes along with the same metaphoric lines that God's using here of the sons of God and daughters of men to paint this picture of what's going on. I think what he means by there were giants in those days is the simple term of there were evil men who controlled a lot of what was going on in those days and times. Another reason for that is it says, "And also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children of them, the same became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown." Not meaning that these were some special powerful abominations, but that they were evil, wicked men who were warlords, who had a reputation, who had power and a following. And guys, again, this is a tale as old as time. If you go through the history of mankind, there have always been some men who thought they were above everything. You had Achilles, Hercules, you had Odysseus. These, again, real men that lived during the Trojan War, but they became legends and mythological people or figures who were used in these crazy stories of how they slayed Cyclops and all these things. They were untouchable, invincible. Achilles couldn't be killed because he had gone into the river Styx and survived it and chosen his spot to be the heel. The only place you could have killed him was to stab him in the heel. It's a tale as old as time. Giants, meaning men of power and renown, and even after them, their daughters come in with the godly line, and it just gets worse. Now we have these even more ruthless, bloodthirsty warlord men of great power and stature who had a lot of control and a lot of sway in early history, and they use it. Just like the mafia, just like any other gang member, group, creed, whatever you can think of. You know probably more groups of evil human beings with power and reputation than you know good ones. I can sit here right now and name off 10 different gangs to you that are actively moving and running around and doing things that they want to do in the background and are pulling the strings. Back in the 70s, there gangs and drug warlords and gun runners and all those kinds of men, they controlled a lot of the world and worked in the background on a lot of the world. You had the mafia, and of course with the mafia, you got whatever flavor you want to go through. Even now, you have the Bloods and the Crips, groups you see even in Arkansas. You have the Hells Angels, who are known worldwide for being a gang that would kill you. You had all kinds of groups of people that were evil men, powerful men, mighty men, meaning men that fought. It's not a good sense. It means they were strong, powerful, not easy to bring down, and even viewed themselves as invincible. Which of old, meaning throughout history's past, who were men of renown, meaning they had a reputation. So what God is saying here is you already had evil men before. Now after this, where all these righteous men are falling for these evil fleshly women, after that happens, it just gets even worse. Because now we don't have as much good battling evil. Now we have good cut in half, down to the bare minimum, to one family. Literally one family in the entire world that is following God to the point that God says, yep, that's it. That's who we've got left. It shows just how quickly sin and evil can begin to overcome. Excuse me. When God's people are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and when God's people give in to their flesh and start chasing after the ways of the flesh instead of following God. So we have all this evil that comes about, right? So much so, it says, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Meaning that we reach a point where there is basically nobody but Noah who is righteous, who is serving God, who is even desiring to go after God, and the imagination of men, they just find in more and more and more ways to take a sin that they already have foundationally and make it even worse than it already was before. If they had found how to commit this sin, they took that and they multiplied it. The idea is that no matter what happened, every generation, it just got worse and worse and worse. It says, and it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man, whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. Again, further, in my opinion, proof that there is no angel-human relationship. I'm going to destroy men. Men and creation, the whole earth. It wasn't that because there's these abominations being born, I'm going to destroy these people. No, I'm destroying mankind as a whole. Mankind as a whole is full of evil continually. And if you don't think mankind can be that evil without some sort of satanic bloodline being thrown in the gene pool, you haven't spent very much time around humans, okay? I'm just going to be plain and simple with you. So things are so evil, so wicked, so bad, that God's literally sorry he even created humanity. Not that God thinks that he made a mistake or that he was wrong or anything like that. It's just a sign that God is feeling sorrow. He created the creation to be a beautiful and wonderful thing for us all to enjoy with him, and we destroyed it. We threw it to the side with complete disregard. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Not Noah earned it. Not Noah was perfect. Not Noah was the best thing since sliced bread. Noah was a regular guy who was trying to serve God as best he could, and because of that, God allotted him grace. It says, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, meaning that he was as good of a man as a man can be. Okay? And Noah walked with God, meaning Noah maintained a relationship with God. So not only is Noah trying to be as good of a man as a man can be, but Noah is maintaining an intimate relationship with God. That's the same phrase that was used for Enoch, his grandfather. Okay? He walked with God. All right? And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Not exactly the best guys in the world, but you take what you can get. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So by the time God is going to pick Noah to be the guy who's going to carry on humanity, who's going to help with the automatic reset button, by the time that happens, the earth is filled with violence, meaning that there's killing going on left and right. If you think it's bad today, guys, it's nothing like it was at this point. It's nowhere near what it was at this point. It says, and God looked upon the earth, And behold, it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Room shalt thou make in the ark, and shalt pitch it within and without with pitch. And this is the fashion which thou shalt make it of. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height of it 30 cubits. A window shalt thou make to the ark, and in a cubit shalt thou finish it above. And the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, with lower second and third stories shalt thou make it. And behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. But with thee will I establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee, and of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark, to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female. Of fowls after their kind, and of cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after his kind, two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. And take thou unto thee of all food that is eaten, and thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. Thus did Noah according to all that God commanded him, so did he. So God comes to Noah, and he tells Noah something that's absolutely crazy, probably, to Noah. I am going to flood the entire world. Remember, it hasn't even rained. There's never even rained before. Before the flood, there was no such thing. But God says, I am going to flood the entire world. You need to build a giant boat. A huge boat. A massive, massive boat. That we will talk about next week. A little bit more in depth. But you're going to build a massive three-story boat. And you're going to take your family and your son's families. And my covenant with you is that you come into the ark. And I will protect you. I will watch over you. And you're going to basically be the one who restarts humanity. We're going to try to start on a better note. But also, he's also in charge of what? Taking care of all of creation. Every single animal, male and female, on the planet at this time is brought into this ark, so that we can preserve all of creation as well that would have been destroyed. Whew, excuse me, I'm having a hard time today. That would have been destroyed if they had not been given the opportunity to get on the boat. Meaning God's going to send these creatures to Noah. Noah needs to build the ark, and he needs to gather enough food for him and for all of these animals for the allotted amount of time that they are going to be on this ark. And what's amazing about this is that this sounds completely crazy. Okay? I want you to put yourself in Noah's shoes. It's never even rained before. You've never even seen a flood before. Okay? Never even heard of such a thing. And God comes to you, and he says, the world is terrible, awful, and evil. And you're like, yeah, I agree with you. Because by this point, it's so violent, people are dying left and right, and people are killing and raping and mongering and stealing, and anything you can think of that mankind can do, they're doing it by this point. To the point that only Noah and his family are the ones that have found grace, are allotted grace by God to maintain humanity. Okay? And God comes to you in these times, tells you he's going to flood the world. I have no idea what that is or how that's going to work, because you never even seen rain or a flood before. And he tells you that he wants you to build a three-story boat about the size of a football field, if not a little bit longer, if I'm not doing my math right in my head. But a three-story boat. Okay. Massive boat. And he wants you, after you're done building it and securing it, again, probably a term that was foreign to Noah, because why do you need a boat if there's not the potential for flood and raining? And there is some discussion as to whether or not there were the concepts of lakes and ponds by this time, or if it was more just well-type things with ocean, and we're not going to get into that discussion. We're just going to say that the idea of needing to build a three-story boat for a flood that would require a three-story boat is beyond comprehension for me, let alone for a man who's never seen rain. Okay? God comes to you, tells you all of this, and he says, and I'm going to use your family to maintain humanity. And I'm going to use you to maintain creation. Every single animal on the planet, male and female, is going to come to your boat when it's done, and you're going to load them up. And in the meantime, you're going to build a boat, and you're going to gather all the food you'll need for you and for all these animals. Wrap your mind around this, being Noah, who is surrounded by evil continually, probably had days of doubt about what God was doing or not doing because of the state of the world. Because you know how you are, even with the way the world is now. It brings sorrow to your heart very often, I'm sure. And you get told all of this news. What are you going to do? Some of us might have laughed out loud like Sarah did when God said that she was going to have a kid and she was 90-something years old. Some of us may have been like, nope, can't do it, God. Ain't no way I can do it. Like Moses, I have a stuttering problem. What am I supposed to do if this happens or this happens? Some of us may have been like, oh, a good old Jonah and the whale. I won't go to that people and proclaim it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to try to save humanity. I don't want to do all that work. I don't want to be a tool for God. Some of us may have just thought we were hallucinating and didn't know what in the world was going on and we dreamed it. But what does it say that Noah did? It says, thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. Despite the fact that the message Noah was given to preach, nobody was going to believe. And as we're going to see next week, people thought he was completely insane. Despite the fact Noah had never seen rain, probably never even seen a flood. Yet God said he's going to flood the whole world. Seemed pretty crazy. Even though Noah probably never even been on a boat before, didn't know how to build a boat, and needed to build a three-story boat, probably seemed like an undertaking that there's no way he could have possibly done. It's him and his three sons building this boat. Even though every single thing about what God wanted Noah to do probably sounded absolutely ludicrous. It made no sense. It was beyond Noah's ability to comprehend and understand. Because it was God that asked and Noah trusted in God, Noah did exactly what he was commanded to do and began building the ark. No matter what you want to believe in at the beginning of chapter 6, whether you think I'm full of it, and that it's angels, or you think I'm spot on and I've just opened up a whole new world for you about chapter 6. No matter what you believe about that. The big picture of chapter 6 is that the world became so full of evil that it was necessary for God to destroy it, which should already prove to you that there's coming a time where the world's going to be so evil, more evil than it already is now, God's going to need to do it again. That's called the second coming, okay? But that if God's people will remain faithful, God will always answer and deal with these things in due time. But we have to have faith. No matter how crazy it seems, no matter how unbelievable it seems, no matter how much we may not even agree with the plan that God has. If we will but have faith and do it, God will take care of the rest. Noah didn't earn grace with God, but he found grace with God because he had the faith to do what God asked him to do. And he had a relationship with God. And that's what matters about chapter 6, is that no matter what goes on in the world, no matter how much evil ever occurs, if there is even one man who is righteous before God and willing to obey God, God can change the entire world with that one man. So don't ever give up. Don't ever give in. And remain faithful to God, because you might just be that one person that God uses to change the entire world. So, that's Genesis chapter 6. As always, go study. Okay, you can go look at the arguments that are made from Jude and Job and all these things. Go study it for yourself. Go decide for yourself. Keep in mind the things that I have said. And you can, of course, obviously, go study my idea of what this really means, of what I say, that this is the line of Seth and the line of Cain that are being discussed, okay? There are plenty of people out there that agree with me that'll also give you the reasons and the same things that I gave you. If that wasn't enough to prove my point or whatever, you want to know more about this discussion. But above all, when you read chapter 6, focus on the fact that Noah had faith. Study that heavily. Study the fact that it's faith that made the difference for God about whether or not Noah and his family made it on the ark. And then, of course, make sure to go back, read over all the chapters we've already gone over. We're making quick headway on all of this. And then also, I do have a bit of an announcement. We have a ton of questions that have been coming in, and I'm sure questions that have never even been asked, in regards to this study, because we are in a very complex part of the Bible where there's a lot of speculation and disagreement, as you have heard me say for the last 6 podcasts. Today we're going to talk about something that a lot of people disagree about. That's what I've said for many of these chapters. And I have tried to maintain and to answer all of your questions, spoken and unspoken. And what I mean by unspoken is I try to write down every single thing I would think that you would ask about and cover that in the podcast. But obviously I am human, and there are things that will come to your mind or be brought to your mind that I am not aware of. So, and my deacon's probably going to kill me because I told him Saturday, but I have rethought that completely because of my own family schedule, and because Saturday is typically the only day I am not doing something church-related. So what's going to happen with our podcast from now on, for all you faithful listeners, is that we are going to be start doing the podcast Friday mornings at 10 o'clock. And we're going to do them live. Now, what live means is that you can tune in and ask your question while we're actually going through the verses. That will help me to address a lot of your questions that I have gotten the last couple of weeks without having to sit down and write out a big, huge, long explanation and go into all those details. It's a lot easier for me to answer your questions verbally and to give you all those details verbally than to sit down and type them and send them to you all individually. So if you want to be there for the live giving of these recordings, you want to be there and actually on the recording with me, that will start Fridays at 10 a.m. Okay, that's when we're going to open this up. Now, if you're on here and you go, no, I don't have any questions, or you're scared to ask questions, or you're going to continue to just send questions via the comment box because you're not going to talk in front of other people, I will still answer your question. You are making my life a little more difficult. I'm just going to throw you under the bus on that one now. But I will still make sure to answer your questions. Want to make sure everybody is learning from this, growing from this, not being confused from this, okay? And if you're somebody that can't be there at 10 o'clock, don't worry. It's still going to be recorded. It's just going to be live, so the questions that are asked can be heard live and can be answered live and recorded for somebody to go back to and listen later, because I'm sure if one person's asking the question there are some of you that have the same question and you're just not communicating that to me. I understand that. I've taught plenty of classes before. I know how students work, okay? So, that is what's going to happen from now on. It will no longer be on Monday. I am going to start doing that this Friday. The reason for that is because my wife's off and she can watch the baby and we can get jump started on it, and that will also give us the time to test run it and get it all figured out, okay? So Friday mornings, this starting this Friday, 10 o'clock, we will go live. You can ask your questions, just say Brother Zach, Pastor Zach, whatever. I'll stop and go, what's your name, whatever, get find out who it is in case I don't know who it is that's asking. We'll talk about those questions, get those questions answered, and then continue with wherever it was that you interjected, okay? If your question comes up and it's something that I'm about to answer, I'll tell you, hang on just a second, that you're about to get the answer to that, okay? Just try to be respectful with the questions. Please don't try to interrupt more than necessary. Give me some time. There may be a lot of questions you're going to ask that I'm already going to answer. But to try to save me some time, maybe save you some time, and to answer any confusion in case what I send you as an answer doesn't quite click with you, this will just make it a whole lot easier for me and a whole lot easier for you if it's live and you ask it verbally and we can discuss it, okay? Because we have an hour and a half to record before I have to open up a second, like a part two, to what's ever going on with the podcast. So, that is how these are going to work from now on. Friday mornings, 10 a.m., studies through the Bible with Pastor Zach / coffee with Pastor Zach, because Lord knows I'm going to need the caffeine to make sure that we can keep things rolling and answering all those questions. But as always, this is Genesis chapter 6. I hope everybody has an excellent week. Go study this on your own. Look at both views. If you don't agree with me, that's fine. Ain't going to make me mad. Doesn't matter either way. The point is that Noah had faith, okay? And that is what is going to help save the redemptive plan of man. And as always, get out of here and go study.